Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And Growing the Game with Ballsy brought to you by Face First Medical Aesthetics. Above Gabbo's on Dewdney Avenue. Guys, Botox for you? It's growing, man. It's getting popular. You look after your body. How about your face? Turn back the clock in a naturally looking way. And also, you got a birthday? Of course you do. And you've got Botox at a discount. It's called Birthday Botox. Check out Face First Medical Aesthetics for more details. Mark Greshner Photography. You can check out his great work, markgreshner.com. I just picked up some of the pictures that he did for me not that long ago. He does outstanding work. He's won every award he can win in the industry. Let him capture the big moments in your life. Pizza Hut's in Saskatchewan. David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies. Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage. Give the three-time Grey Cup champ a call at 306-502-5355 if you want to get in the real estate game. Riviere Ag Seeds over there in Radville. Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified Durham yellow peas and chickpeas. And before we get to our Where Are They Now segment, which is brought to you by Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance, check out Corey Zadorozniak and Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. Before we get to our Where Are They Now segment, which features Dwayne Mandruziak, the longtime equipment manager of the Edmonton Eskimos, as he was unceremoniously dumped by that team. We'll talk to him about that and about his memories of Joey Moss, the locker room attendant with the Eskimos and Oilers, who recently passed away, an Edmonton sports icon. But before we get to that, let's talk with Matt Kellett. It was on this day back in 1994 that my old Rams teammate, I wasn't a teammate of his in 94, but in 1994, he hit a CJFL playoff record field goal, October 30th, 1994, against the Surrey Rams. It was from 57 yards out. All right, Matt, this day, 1994, seems like a lifetime ago. You set the CJFL playoff record with a 57-yard field goal. Do you remember?
Yeah, pretty vividly, actually. It's one of those playoff games versus one of those battles we had with the Surrey Rams right before halftime. And win aided, of course. And that's when I was whippy and skinny.
Did you... In the pregame warm-up, do you go, and even in your pro days, do you, you know, the coach come to you, Frank come to you and say, okay, how far can you kick it? Like, how far were you kicking it in pregame?
I don't know that answer. I think that, you know, back in junior days, I probably in warm-up kicked way too many. And then when you realize that you really don't need to be doing that many, and neither you don't need to be going that far back. Back in the pro days, you would just go to the 35, 45 yard line and just watch to see how far the ball is actually traveling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't remember much more than the actual kick. I can't remember much more of the game even.
Do you snicker, Matt, when you hear announcers like myself sometimes, oh, well, he was making them from 55, 60 in pregame warmups, because that there's no rush. There's a bunch of different elements that aren't included in the pregame warmups.
Absolutely. It's one of those things. I mean, it's, you know, you get kids even now that are filming themselves, and they're doing it with the ball standing still, and they're taking, you know, X number of seconds to kick a ball. And yes, they can kick it for a mile. But again, with all the other added features in the game, with the snap and the hold and the rush, too many other factors to worry about what you did in warm-up, for sure.
When you're kicking a ball with the wind at your back, it's kind of like throwing the football, too. It's with the wind at your back. It's hard to judge. Like, normally, if you're throwing a 45-yard pass on a regular day, you got to put some zip behind that thing. But if the wind's behind you, that 45-yard pass can turn into an 80-yard pass. Same thing with kicking, Matt?
Yeah, very similar. I mean, it's one of those things that you learn over time. You know, as a young guy, you probably think, okay, wind at my back, I'm really going to lay into this. Same thing as when you're sitting on the tee box, right? And you get the wind behind you, you really try to crank one. And typically it doesn't happen. You don't usually get your best kick or your best tee shot when you're thinking that way. But when you grow and you mature into your kicking, you realize all you have to do is make great contact, get the ball up in the air, and let Mother Nature take control.
Did you know it was good when you let it go, or were you kind of like giving the old body English, hoping that the wind wouldn't carry it wide?
Yeah, no, that one was online. It was one of those ones that you just hope that it made over the bar. And I mean, again, I think it probably made it over by 1 or 2 yards, so didn't have much more room to spare. And I think later in that game, we tried another one around the same type of distance, maybe even 1 or 2 yards even further, and wasn't even close. So again, luck is part of it as well. And without wind, you don't get records. So, it's one of those things that Don Matthews always used to say would be, you only kick with the wind half the game and you kick against the wind for the other half. So take advantage of it and don't stress about it in the other half.
One of the great guys in Rams history right here, Matt Kellett, the longest field goal in CJFL history on this day in 1994. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Ballsy.
All right, speaking with longtime equipment manager in the Canadian Football League, Dwayne Mandruziak, known for his time with the Edmonton Eskimos. How are you today, fine sir?
You know what? I'm pretty good. It's been an interesting couple of days with the passing of my good friend Joe Moss, but you start laughing and everything is pretty funny. There's more funny stories about Joe than there are sad.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those in a second, Dwayne. How are you doing as things relate to COVID? And, of course, for listeners that don't know, you have Parkinson's as well. Is that something you got to be careful with?
Well, it's something you got to monitor. You make sure you get enough sleep. One important part is to make sure you have your medication. And I've changed my diet a lot since I was diagnosed. And you know what, to tell you the truth, most people don't even know that I've got it. I don't have the shaky type of Parkinson's. I have a type that's called rigidity, and so I cramp up. But other than that, you know what, I call it a mild inconvenience.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about your buddy Joe Moss, a sports icon in Edmonton. I know there's a petition going around to get a rink named after him. I saw on Commonwealth Stadium, they put on the turf there, they put, a nice thing at center field for him. What's it been like for you the last few days and for the city of Edmonton? Because he was a big part of both your life and the city.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been it amazed me to the point where it surprised me a little bit how long the phone calls and everything were coming into me, but it didn't surprise me how the people reacted. Joe is he's an ordinary superstar. He wasn't looking for fame. Fame was looking for him, you know.
Yeah.
And he was so much fun to be around. At first, he was difficult. He could be difficult to listen to or to hear, understand what he's saying, but I used to tell our players, take a few minutes, listen to Joe, and it's amazing. He really is the world's most interesting man.
Hey, Dwayne, how were you introduced to Joey Moss?
You know what? I'd met Joe a couple times before he worked with us, when we'd be at the same sort of social gathering, but he'd be with Wayne and Wayne's sister, Vicky, and then one day Wayne gave me a call, which is, when you get a call from Wayne Gretzky, you answer it. And Wayne called me and asked if he could bring Joe down. He wanted to talk to me for a few minutes, and he came to the stadium and asked if Joe could work for us. And I said, absolutely. He said, I'll pay him for working for you. And I said, if he works here, we'll pay him. There's no free ride, you know. And he started working with us the next day, and I called Sparky, their equipment manager, and said, update me on this kid who's worked with you for a year. Give me a hint on how he's going to be. And he said, he's smarter than you think.
Hmm.
And he really was. He was vacuuming at the end of practice, and I went up to him, and I said, when you finish vacuuming, we'll have a cold beer. And he's got a big smile and says, oh, good, cold beer. And that's what he called it, the cold beer. So I went back in the equipment room when I was working. I came back out about 10 minutes later. He's sitting in the locker, one of the lockers, and my two other assistants, Rick Holmes and Rob Strecker, are vacuuming. I go, what's going on? And Robbie says, he hurt his elbow. He says he can't vacuum anymore. And I went over and I said, what's happened, Joe? And he says, I hurt my elbow. And I said, can't vacuum anymore, eh? And he goes, no. And I said, then you probably can't lift a cold beer, eh? He got up, ran to the vacuum cleaner, pushed Robbie out of the way, and said, oh, I'm fine now. Let's go, you know. So You're starting to think, man, this kid's pretty smart. He's got these guys conned in already. You know?
That's awesome. Hey, there was a story where he, like, when he first started there, like he brought the hard hat to work. Like, he was picking lint up with his fingers. Is that true?
Absolutely. He would always stay. Joe and I would be the last guys to leave. You know, I'd have the guys clean the lockers, and then I kind of obsessive compulsive. I'd go and clean them afterwards, change them. Put things the way I like. But Joe, I'm cleaning out the lockers. I look down, and Joe's on his hands and knees, picking his little sock lint up with his fingers, and I went, man, I got to pick up my game. This guy's going to make me look bad, you know.
You drove him to practice every day. Tell me about those rides.
I'll tell you what, he's a huge James Bond fan, so he'd stay at my house for the whole summer during training camp, and then I'd just keep him at my house, and we'd get home from work, and he'd on the way in, he'd have a iPad. Well, it wouldn't be an iPod. It'd be like a tape, cassette tape.
Yeah.
And you could hear him, the James Bond theme songs were on, and they're so loud I didn't need the radio. And he'd be singing his little heart out. And then he started singing La Bamba. So him and I would sing La Bamba at the top of our lungs in my car. And when we stopped at a red light, I'd roll down all the windows. And people would be looking at us, and we'd be laughing our faces off. And then we'd just take off. And he was so much fun, man. I'll tell you what, he was always a practical joker. And he had a wit. Boy, I'll tell you what, Mike, he was fast. He'd argue with he'd get chirped by our players, and he'd come back at him, and the players had no comeback for him.
That's awesome. You know, let's talk about how popular this guy was, because really, you think about the Oilers, the Eskimos, like the Warren Moons, the Wilkinsons, the Gizmos, and then you got the Gretzky and Messier and Curry, but he ranks right up there with those guys. Like, he's known, you know, he's known in Vegas, he's known everywhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'd have our fan day, and he'd sign more autographs than most of our players. And he was the guy, but you know what, he was never caught up on all that. He loved to be around people. He was a showman. I used to say it was like an episode of America's Got Talent in our locker room every day, because he'd do something, you know, whether it be break dancing or singing or just, you know, he'd wrestle with J.C. Sherrod every day. We called midget wrestling. And he was. I'll tell you what, he was serious about his wrestling. Training camp one year, he was wrestling with my son, and Matty had him in a full Nelson, and he had his head against the carpet, and one of our trainers grabbed him and said, I'll save you, and he pulled him. He was pulling him backwards, and Joe was screaming, and he got a rug burn from his eyebrow to his hairline, and I had to call his mother to tell him that when you see Joe, there's a great big rug burn on his face, and let me tell you what happened. And I explained it, and she goes, did he lose the match? I go, yes, he did. He goes, oh, Betty was mad.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, Dwayne, this is how big a deal this guy was. Gretzky called him every birthday.
Yes.
Every birthday, yeah. Like you said, when Wayne calls, that's a big deal. Just amazing stories from the Edmonton Eskimos locker room with Dwayne Mandruziak. It's been a tough little while for you here. Your buddy Joe dies. Before that, you get released by the Eskimos after 49 seasons. Because of everything going on, we can't go into it too much. But I do got to ask you, how are you doing mentally, and what were your thoughts when it initially happened, Dwayne?
Well, it's funny because I've been the one part of my job that I hated the most is when players got released, you know, because it ends a dream for them, and a lot of veterans when they get released come by and you know, we get the goodbye hug and guys tell me I didn't see it coming, and I went in and I didn't see it coming, and I got over the initial shock, I was more upset that it brought the effect it had on my family, you know. Mm-hmm. My granddaughters are crying because they're not going to go to another football game. And, you know, my sons grew up there virtually. That was their playground, you know, the locker room. And they were influenced by so many guys. My oldest son, Matt, is named after Matt Dunnigan. So to me, it was a huge part of my life has been changed. But you know what? It didn't end the way I'd envisioned it. I have so much support from people around me and my friends, and I'm fine now. You know, you get over that initial kind of punch in the gut, and you move on.
Has it been easier, though, Dwayne, maybe because there has been no CFL season in a way?
Oh, absolutely, you know. I was used to, when I was temporarily laid off the first time, my wife had a chores jar about the size of a 45-gallon drum because this is all the stuff I would neglect during the season. So I fixed up our whole yard. I fixed up the inside of the house. I was actually making things up because I'd done so much stuff. And my golf game is really good now. It improved immensely. So
that's awesome.
You know, it's weird, and you're right when you say that it doesn't seem like it's real because there's no football on.
Yeah. Yeah, do you think it'll sink in more than maybe the first time you watch an Eskimos game and you're not, especially one at Commonwealth, and you're not on the sidelines? Like, you know, maybe that's when it'll really hit home for you?
Well, I'm not sure I'll watch an Eskimos game again, but
yeah. And like you said, because of everything going on in the legalese, you can't go into it too much. But you know, you're getting over it. But is it like do you feel betrayed? Like it's, you know, you said you were shocked. Like you can't just put 49 years behind you.
You know what? And you're right. You can't. And I have to focus on the fact that I had 49 great years and that I gave that organization a good portion of my life, you know, and it's you know, I've often said I gave them 49 years, they couldn't give me one.
Yeah,
but,
like that bothers me, Dwayne. I know what a great guy you are, and I'm getting into this in a second. You were honored here in Regina the last time we had a Grey Cup, but when they said this to you, are you like, can I at least go to 50? Like, can I not at least, you know, get to my golden anniversary?
Well, there are circumstances that eventually I'll speak about.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I got the news and it shocked me. And some of the questions I brought out, they answered those about why they did it. But I just wanted to get out of there and get to my family. And so that's been now over a month. We haven't communicated with the club, so it's interesting. You know, I would have thought that the club was better than that, but the club I knew was, you know.
Yeah, no, and I get it. Hey, but let's look at some of the positives, because you're a positive guy. Number one, how do you feel about the outpouring of people? People like me who barely know you. Like, I know you, but I don't know you that well. But people that you know and all across the league, everybody was outraged that you were let go. That, in a way, that must make you feel good. Like you mattered. You're not just an equipment guy. You are one of the big behind-the-scene figures in the history of this league.
Well, you know, back years ago, when Hugh Campbell was our general manager, he called me into the office. I was making $36,000 a year. And he said, I got news for I come in. I think I'm going to get a raise. And he says, I just want you to know that I can't give you a raise anymore because I've always had it in my mind that I'll never pay my equipment guy more than $36,000. And I said, well, then you have to find a new equipment guy because anybody can watch a bunch of videos and anybody can read a book on how to suit guys up, but I bring something different to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I run that locker room and I know I get the vibe of the locker room when a guy's having a tough time. I bring him to my office and talk to him, and I've kept guys going and, you know, settle guys down. And Hugh, I said, I'll go get ready to get out of here. And Hugh called me back and said, you're right, you are more than that. So I feel that I've contributed in ways that some of the guys, other equipment guys, didn't. And I really talked to a lot of our guys in the league, being the elder statesman, and how to react with guys and how to be smart and have a locker room that respects you, because a lot of times guys aren't respected in the position we're in.
Yeah, no, and when you won that Commissioner's Award in Regina the week of the Grey Cup here in 2013, one of the things that was described, Dwayne Mandrusiak, a mentor to rookies and a confidant for the veterans. I think that describes it pretty well. Like, you were the glue in that locker room. A lot of guys came and went. You said goodbye to a lot of guys, a lot of coaches. What'd you have, like 13, 14 coaches or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, you were there, Dwayne, but, like, How did you evolve into that position? Like, you were an equipment guy, but how did you evolve into being something more? Like, do you just have that, or how did you kind of morph yourself into kind of almost being like a counselor in the locker room?
Well, you know, my father was a salesman, and he was gone for 4 or 5 days a week. And so I was the oldest son. My sister was older than I am, but I was the oldest son. And so I had to assume the position of, the father figure for my two brothers. And I had to do the yard work and stuff. And so I just took the task at hand, and I just, you know, I did things the way that I would do them, and never wanted my mom to have to say you have to do something. So when I was a young kid, I was going up for spring football, and I hurt my elbow, and they said, well, you're going to be out for a while. And the coach said, well, I was sorry, because we thought you're tiny, but you're a pretty good little player. And I said, well, I really want to stay around the team. Can I hang around? You know, and he said, well, we need a trainer. And I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, I'm going to send you to the Edmonton Eskimos to a gentleman named Tom Pond, who became my mentor, a great guy. And Tom will teach you, he'll teach you how to tape and do a few, you know, things like an ice bag and stuff. And so the first day I was there, they fired one of the kids working there, and he turned to me and he said, hey, kid, you want to work here? And I said, well, I have to ask my mom, you know. And so I went home and I asked my mom, could I go work there? And she said, yeah, when school starts, you better keep your grades up. And I was 14 years old, and I haven't worked any place since.
That's outstanding, man. Hey, Dwayne, where did the wearing of the shorts, no matter the weather, come from?
You know what? I don't know. I just, you know, I've always used the theory that if you keep your upper body warm, your legs will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started wearing them, and I started wearing them because I wanted to show the guys that it's not that cold.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have guys they'd be freezing, and it would be September. I'd say, fellas, it's not that cold. And so I said, I'm going to wear my shorts for the rest of the year. And eventually I just got to the point where I wore them all the time, and I don't get cold. You know, you're on the field in Edmonton, you're 60 feet below street level, the way the stadium's built. And we got like a million BTU heaters on the sidelines, and there's 100 guys on the bench. And so the wind never got to me. I'm short enough that the wind was going over my head, you know.
You never got frostbite. You never came back to the locker room and like, whoa, that was a bad move. Because I talked to Normie Fong. You heard that interview I did with him. He's like,
that was an awesome, great interview. Yeah, what a great guy.
Yeah, one time he said he goes back to the locker room, and he's like, I'm trying to be like Georgie in Calgary and Dwayne in Edmonton, and I come into the locker room like, whoa, that's maybe not a good idea. You never had that when you went back to the locker room?
Never.
tough guy. Hey, who's your
sometimes tough, sometimes stupid, yeah. But we're okay.
Okay. Hey, Dwayne, who's your best friend in football?
Dan Kepley.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, Kep was, he had no pain threshold. And on a number of occasions, one time we were playing in Saskatchewan and he broke his jaw. Mm-hmm. And he grabbed me by the scruff of the neck. He said, and he couldn't talk. He kind of mumbled, let's go. And I go, where are we going? He goes, to the hospital. I'm going to get my jaw fixed. We'll come back for the second half. And I go, it ain't going to happen, dude. And we just, like, Kep and I hit it off because I would always be staying late. And he was the last guy to leave the locker room when he played. We used to call him Stinky because he had more cologne on than you could shake a stick at. So on a number of occasions, Kep would say, let's go and have something to eat or let's do something. And nobody ever messed with Kep, but I always messed with Kep. Like, he had a Corvette, and I made a key, like out of cardboard, I made a key, wind-up key, and I put it on the top of his car. And I stayed at, I knew he'd be mad because he loved that car, and I stayed in the locker room till about midnight, and I walk outside, and it's pitch black out, and I lock the gate, and I'm going to go to my car, and somebody grabs me by my ears from behind, and I said, Kep, you waited, you know?
That's the best.
When he became a coach, we golfed all the time, me, him, and Wilk. I'll tell you what, I look at some of my golf scorecards, and it's Ron Lancaster, Tom Wilkinson, Dan Kepley, and me, and I'm thinking, wow, me and three Hall of Famers, this is unbelievable. And it's great for me, you know, from my standpoint, to be able to tell these people that everyone admires and stuff, and I just call them my friends. It's really I'm really blessed, buddy.
Come on, buddy. That's four Hall of Famers on that card. Don't sell yourself short. You know, Normie told me the one time there, I believe it was Ridgeway. He sewed Ridgeway's pockets shut, so he just couldn't reach his keys, just enough so he couldn't reach his keys get into his van. Besides that thing you pulled on Kepley, any other good stories you got from the locker room where you kind of pranked somebody?
Well, one year we kept sewing Blake Dermott's practice jersey a little bit every week. And he kept saying, "Man, I'm gaining lots of weight. This jersey's getting really tight."
I love it. Hey, what was that 78-82 run like? The all those championships in a row. Can you pick a favorite one, or is that like trying to pick your favorite kid?
You know what? You can't pick a favorite one because it was a dream that everything went right. It was the perfect storm, we used to call it. We had the right match of people. We'd lose a couple guys through retirement or for exchange, but we had that core. And, you know, for 5 years in play, especially in football, our O-line stayed healthy, which really made a huge difference. And when one guy did get hurt, if a guy got hurt, we brought in a guy like Mike Wilson, who was an all-star. And you know what the guys used to say? When we go to the great – all our road trips were business trips. This team was so far bonded. Every Tuesday we'd go to the cheapest hotel in Edmonton called the Grand Hotel, and everyone showed up, and if you didn't drink, you go have a pop, but you had to show up. And so guys would sit there and everyone took care of everybody, you know, our families. We'd play for mortgages when the Grey Cup came in. I didn't, because I didn't get a playoff money at the time, but
yeah,
they included me in everything, and it was great, you know. We had so much fun, and they're all the fact being that you couldn't pick a favorite one because every one of them had something magical in it. You know, the game, you know, the one and we're playing Ottawa and we're down.
Yeah, that one. 81. Yeah, 81. Yeah,
yeah. Hugh says, if they can get 20 points, we can get 20 points. Let's go. And, you know, and it was amazing to watch. And to watch Warren Moon grow into an amazing quarterback, he was so cool. He never lost his nerve and stuff. It was fun to watch. His talent is unbelievable.
Hey, is the worst defeat the 16-2 Eskimos who lost to the 9-9 Rough Riders in 89? Was that the worst one? Because everybody thought that's the juggernaut team that nobody can beat.
Absolutely, it was. You're not cocky. Like, I never got cocky in any of that stuff, but I was confident there's no way anybody can beat us, because we have been focused for the whole year. I'll tell you what, you know, it's the magic of sport. You know, you're as good as you were that day, and they were good. Holy cow.
Yeah, they came out good. Hey, we talk about picking your favorite title. That one in 2003 here against Montreal with Tom Higgins as the head coach. I believe both of your sons were on the equipment staff with you. That had to be special here in Regina to celebrate that together. I know Edmonton's a great place, but the Rider Nation, the heartland of football, a great, great cup here.
I'll tell you what, that was a great week. I love going to Regina. I have so many friends there, the Muellers and everybody out there. We had a hoot, and I think when the game ended, we went back out onto the field, and TSN was doing a post-game thing, and it was cold as crap out, and the equipment staff was against the office, training staff in a game of yards, and we had the beers over on the side, and a couple of guys, TV celebrities, Mark Schultz and Steve Antle, were morning show guys, came out and played. We had them out there. And, man, it was just like, it was the perfect, that's a perfect place for a Grey Cup, because it's small enough that actually gets into it. I've been at Grey Cups in Toronto. You don't even know the game is on. But we had so much fun. And same within 2013 when I got the Commissioner's Award. People were so nice to us. My wife and I were there. And my son, actually, my youngest son, was had just started the fire department, so he couldn't get away. But
you know, I have to say, Dwayne. Besides, of course, the Riders winning the Grey Cup that Sunday against Hamilton, and showing up to the stadium. I did the pregame show, so I walked over from Co-operators, and I'm there an hour and a half before the game, and the stadium's already full. Besides those memories, my other favorite memory was watching you win the Commissioner's Award at the Kinexus Arts Center in 2013. What did that award mean to you?
Well, you know what? I got a phone call a few weeks earlier on that from Mark Cohen, and he goes, hey, is Dwayne there? And it was on my cell, and I answered, this is him. And he goes, hi, Dwayne, this is Mark Kwan. And I said, I used to call him Mr. Commish. I said, hey, Mr. Commish, how you doing? And he goes, good. He says, he explains that he's calling me because he wants to tell me that he's going to present me with the Commissioner's Award. And I said, no, you're not. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I don't want it. He goes, what do you mean you don't want it? I said, I don't want to give it to someone else. And he goes, no, I picked you. And I said, I don't want it. You know, and so we argued for a couple of minutes. And he says, well, then I'm going to give it to somebody who's going to represent you. So I want you to go. And what it did was
why didn't you want it? Why didn't you want it?
Because that's not what I'm here for. I don't look for the glory and the accolades. My assistant Robbie said to me one day, doesn't it bother you that the boys don't say thank you? And I said, we're dealing with a bunch of young 20-year-old kids that are self, absorbed. And it doesn't bother me, you know. Like I don't get excited when we win. I get satisfied because I know I've had a contribution and there's a little bit of I've given a little bit to it, you know. And I took my job very seriously, you know. I've got it down and framed in my basement, which I think my basement is nicer than the Hall of Fame with some of the stuff I have. I have the last jersey worn, Moon War. And it was important for my family to recognize that it wasn't just an award for me. We missed a bunch of stuff because I was always working, and I'm very fortunate that I had two boys, because if I had a girl, they wouldn't have been able to do what they did. But my boys worked their balls off, and they would clean the locker room immaculately, and then their bedrooms at home were just a pigsty, you know.
Well, it's kind of like the guy that's in charge of, yard service. His yard's the worst. When he gets home, he doesn't want to do anything at home, right? Like he's done, right? That's kind of what it is. Hey, two more quick questions for you, Dwayne.
Yeah.
Even though you said you won't probably watch an Eskimos game, you still have to love the CFL. What do you think about the future of the Canadian Football League? Are you concerned about its future?
You know what, I really am. I've been around enough times. One time Hugh Campbell said, I think we're going down. It's about the mid-90s. I think this is it. And I'll help you find another job. If you want to leave now, I'll understand. And he looked at me and he said, how about you? And I said, Woodward's had gone down by then. I think he's in trouble. I said, it doesn't matter anymore. I've invested too much into this. And you know what, I look at it and it's a league that's gone and it seems, you know, it's, at times we've kept it together with bubblegum and Band-Aids, but financially that scares me to figure out, without playing this year, where the clubs are going to get that initial outlay of cash to get them going. And it's I call this the last professional league that you play for the love of the game, because no player that plays in this league is going to retire after he's done. You know, even the high-paid quarterbacks like Mike Riley now, Mike will have to work, as all of them do, And that's what makes it special, you know. Our guys, when they're asked to do an appearance, they're more than happy to do it, you know. And so, I worry about the league. It's a big part of our lives. And I met my wife; she was the ticket office manager, and so we used to call my two kids, my wife, my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law all worked there. I said we called it a home family-run business, you know.
Dude, that I didn't realize that part of it. Like, I realized you're 49 years. I didn't realize all the family connections. For you to get ousted after 49 years, that really is a gut punch. Like, that's a gut punch to your whole family.
Well, that's the part that bothered me the most, Mike, is that what it did to my family, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. Here's a thought I want to get from the grassroots guy, from the Canadian, from the backbone behind a great Canadian franchise, a once great Canadian franchise. Like, if the CFL does come back, and I like to think that it will, because I don't want to see us throw away 100-plus years, and for the most part, we've got good, like, decent, stable ownership, and we've got some pretty good facilities now in the league, except for maybe, you know, Calgary Stadium. Everything else has been refurbished, like Commonwealth. Regina's got a nice new stadium. But do you think we should get back to maybe the Canadian Football League, where there are more Canadians instead of trying to get rid of the Canadians? Or how about this? You're around long enough to remember when guys like Ron Lancaster, who you mentioned, and probably a lot of guys in the Eskimos, had to have a job during the season. Practice back in the day didn't start till 5:30 because the guys were working jobs. I know that's unheard of in professional leagues, but you just said it, Dwayne. It's not a regular professional sports league.
Well, and you know what? I used to catch the bus from school, stop over about three or four blocks from the stadium, and run to practice, do the practice because it was in the evening, like you said, and then I'd get back on the bus and do my homework on the way home. Mm-hmm. And start again the next day. And you're right, it was because three-quarters of the guys in our team worked at something. And now it's, you know, it's becoming more of a business. Like, most of our guys, nobody works anymore. They're all heavily invested in working out. But, you know what, I think that, you know, Randy Ambrosi is really between a rock and a hard place as far as trying to find a way to keep this league above water. But I think you're absolutely right when you said, I think we should focus more. If we're going to invest money in some of the 2.0s, I think we should invest it in coaching in the universities and in junior ball and high school to develop better Canadians, you know, or more Canadians. Because the Canadians now, it's very difficult to tell the difference between a Canadian football player and an American football player. The ability level is almost level in this league, you know.
That's good, and it's a very interesting point coming from a longtime guy who's been around the league. Okay, lastly, what's in your future? Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool, Dwayne, that I talked to you getting ready for this interview, and you told me, well, I can't do it at this time, Ballsy, because I'm doing Meals on Wheels. Tell me about that. How'd you get involved in that?
Well, when I was laid off, we had a lot of time on our I still have a lot of time on my hands, actually, now that you mentioned it. I was watching the news, and they came on, and it mentioned that they were looking for volunteer drivers, and so I went in and did my police record, and amazingly, it's clean. And back in the days with Kep, it might not have been, but I started driving out there, and it's been about a month and a half now, and I scheduled for a couple days a week, but I've given them my name if somebody's sick, so just to give me a call. And so this week I'll be going 4 days in a row, and I really enjoyed it. I'll tell you what, you meet some incredible people along the way, and it makes you appreciate that you have your health.
Put your life in perspective. Hey, one more. I heard this story. Tell me if it's true or not. One time Don Matthews let you make a pick in the draft. Is that, I heard Don Matthews had to go to the bathroom, left the room, and got you to make the pick. Is that true or false?
That's true. Don was crazy. I'll tell you what, he did the weirdest stuff. You know, we'd come back from a road trip and he'd have a bus for the guys to go party in he'd keep the party going. And, yeah. And, he never, you know, what you used to call him Macho when he first came here the first time. And,
yeah.
And, he was so much fun to coach with. And he was Chris Jones was a clone of Don Matthews.
Yeah. Hey, who did you take? Do you remember who you picked?
I can't even remember. I'd have to look at the draft. I would know, but there's so many guys have come through my door. There's certain things that I know that I did, but I don't remember what I did.
Well, man, I'm glad I got to meet you. I'm glad I got a chance to interview you here. Definitely a guy deserving of so many accolades, even though you don't want them. Thanks for this, Dwayne. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully, if I ever end up back in Regina, I might go visit Normie, and I'll come by and make sure we say hi.
If you ever want to come to a game, man, not that you'll need help, but if you ever need help, I'll hook you up for sure. I'd love to hook you up.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.